to me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, a variety of topics we're going to go into in some depth. There have been questions about, are almonds raw? Well, today they are, but in the very near future, they won't be. The raw almond debate, the USDA and Big Agra conspire to mislead the consumer and put the small person out of business, the small farmers. We'll get to that. A lot on our environmental segment today, and we do more environmental updates than any other program in the world. New nukes. We've been told that that's an important part of our environmental sustainable project. It isn't and shouldn't be. Harvey Wasserman, the end of the nuclear renaissance. Then debating the future of our water supply. That's a good idea. So the World Water Council convened the World Water Forum. And sure enough, they talked about world water. And they brought together, well, some of the top people in government and banks and NGOs and private water operators. And they had a conversation about water services and managing the growing water crisis. And what was the outcome? Lucrative contracts, privatize water everywhere. Well, hold on a second. How does that help us? It doesn't. Never was intended to. So the mainstream media didn't begin to look underneath the headlines. Oh, the future of water being discussed. No, the future of water being purchased. Also, we've been led to believe that the Gulf of Mexico spill has healed. No, it hasn't. Are you aware that we have now discovered all of those little tiny tar balls, a deadly bacteria that if it touches your skin, you can end up getting sick and dying? Oh, you'll hear about that today. The gas industry, they're spinning a great big lie and saying that gas hydrofracking is not the problem. It is. We'll give you some examples. And also, there's a brand new Harvard study that strengthens the link between pesticides and colony collapse disorder in bees. So that's just some of what we'll get to either today or tomorrow. Now then with our special issues, this is a very pro-Obama pitch, and it's making all the rounds out there. And all the people on MSNBC and all the foot soldiers on other networks, including Current TV, are talking about Obama's top 50 accomplishments. Good for him. Well, today I will do a commentary that I wrote and also interweave that with Chris Hedges. And I'm just going to take one of the 50, the number one, the one that they put number one on the list, and offer a different point of view. And then on upcoming programs over the next 6 months, we will offer a different point of view on each one of these accomplishments. Yeah, they are accomplishments. Accomplishments for whom? Who benefits? I'll go through them. You won't believe some of them that they're bragging about. Then the empires, then and now. Do you ever wonder why the Romans were so interested, for example, in going to certain countries and not others? Well, we're going to talk about what they gained. You know, the reasons Rome did not extend its empire east into Germany was not the military prowess of the Germanic tribes, but Rome's calculation that the cost of conquest exceeded the value of extractable resources. Ah, so that's why Great Britain and the Ottomans and so many others wanted a larger empire to extract the resources. Okay, what's our goal? Are we extracting resources? No. What is our goal, then, for our empire? That'll be a commentary. As will later Glenn Greenwald's, Obama takes Bush's secrecy games one step further. And then I'll be getting into three corporate myths that threaten the wealth of nations. And I've wanted to talk about this for some time. I've actually written a commentary on this. We've always been led to believe that there's a new day and we must trust the markets. How many times have we heard that? Let the markets. Who are the markets? Who are they? There were 981 companies. with 10,000 or more employees each. And although they were less than 2% of all U.S. firms, they employed 27% of the total labor force and accounted for 31% of all payrolls. Literally millions of smaller businesses depended directly and indirectly on the productivity of these big businesses and the disposable income of their employees. So why is it that 1% or 0.01% benefits so much and everyone else does not? We're going to talk about that. I'm going to show you the difference between corporations and corporate responsibility in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s versus what we have today, where the shareholder and executive value is what is appreciated more than anything else, and why a lot of America's public companies are not private enterprise. So this whole myth that we hear, well, let the private sector, hold on, friend. These are not private. This is known by one person who can make whatever decision they choose. These are public. Public. And we haven't even focused on this in any of the debates, any of the discussions. Once a corporation is no longer private, once it is public, IBM is public, Microsoft is public, Monsanto is public, DuPont is public. Once something's public, and that includes most of the Koch brothers corporations are public, well then why should we consider them private? Because one person sold out their interest? No, when they sold out their interest, they got a walkaway check for selling an interest, the majority interest in their corporation. Then the public was allowed in. What rights does that allow us? How should that change the game plan? How can that reestablish some sanity in the marketplace? That'll be a discussion. As you see, we're going to go into a lot of different areas in the coming days, and we have some outstanding guests slated for this week. Later today, a short newsmaker update with Dr. Doug Rocky. He is probably America's greatest expert on depleted uranium and its health risks. And I just had this thought. How many Americans died in the Vietnam War? 10 years we were there. How many have died due to depleted uranium and other exposure in the Gulf wars in Iraq? You'll be surprised with the numbers. He'll give us that. And what we're leaving behind is a permanent environmental catastrophe in that country. Let's start with the health and nutrition. First up, I always like to get ahead on something that's exciting out there. And one of the natural painkillers that's been used for a long time, especially in the, comes from the rainforests of Southeast Asia. And it's a traditional energy boost. It alleviates anxiety. It helps with depression. And it promotes a feeling of wellness and happiness, is what is called kratom. Kratom. It comes from the plant called Mitragyna spicificosa. And what it does is this: it allows the body to stimulate more of its own natural opiate-like activity, so that it helps alleviate a lot of the pain or need for heavy-duty painkillers like Vicodin or morphine. So it's not addictive. It is equally as powerful. So wouldn't you assume that that would be something we should be paying attention to? Well, there's an interesting article in the Journal of Ethnopharmacology that found that two of the more than 25 naturally occurring alkaloids found in kratom leaves exhibit opiate-like effects in animals, and yet these two compounds act merely as receptors in a much less severe way than, say, morphine, which is highly addictive and potentially deadly. And yet it also stimulates a live, vibrant, pain-free existence without the harmful side effects that you have. So this is just something I'm letting you know exists that we should be paying some attention to and that we are not up to this point. I'm asked all the time, what about fermented foods? On the one hand, we're told stay away from fermented foods if you have any candida or yeast overgrowth or allergies for that matter. and I disagree. To the contrary, I believe that an allergy-enhancing program, meaning to enhance our body strength against allergies, starts with the immune system, not an allergy-free system. I believe an allergy-free system actually weakens the immune system and makes us more vulnerable. In that vein, I believe that we should be looking for more raw, living foods. And in this context, fermented foods are certainly that. It helps with digestion. And especially if a person is taking in some raw foods they shouldn't. Like a lot of people go too far. They'll start taking raw broccoli, raw cauliflower, raw asparagus. You can't be doing that because the body cannot digest and absorb the nutrients. It's going right through your fiber. If you steamed it for a few minutes, yes, then you're breaking down the cell walls, the oligocellulose, and you're benefiting from the water and the enzymes, antioxidants, chlorophyll that's inside. Also, most Americans eat too fast, we eat too much, and we eat the wrong combinations, and we eat too much dead, decaying matter, especially meat. Just think for a moment. What is an aged, prime age beef? It is the smell of death as you enter a village that's just had a lot of death. That's exactly what a house smells like, where they're causing the intentional biodegradation of the meat. In other words, it's decomposing, it's rotting flesh. But they do it with chemicals, so you don't smell it. It used to be in the Old West, they would have a room that they would have some ice in, ice, big ice that they would bring out of the mountains, like in Colorado. And then they would keep the meat there. Then they would rotate it around into another room that was warm. And then suddenly the meat would start to decompose. And then they'd bring it back in for another day and then back in for another day. And they'd just rotate this till it was 20 aged. So the key was to have 20-day aged meat, which would, quote, melt in your mouth. Yeah, it had rotted down to just slime. But because they didn't have a lot of dressings, and it was just salt and pepper, and people frequently didn't have good teeth. You know, we forget about that. The Americans in the Old West didn't brush, didn't have dental floss, didn't have water picks, frequently didn't bathe a lot. The water was scarce, and it wasn't, you had to warm it up, and it was a whole lot of effort to fill up a whole bath. You'd do it occasionally, and that's one of the things people really enjoyed. The cowboys enjoyed when they went into a town. They would pay anywhere from a nickel to a quarter, and they'd be able to get a shave, a haircut, and a bath. And that was a big treat for them because that might have been the only time that water was on their body except for the rain in a couple months. Then they'd head off to the restaurant, which is generally in the hotel, and they'd have a steak and a potato, because potatoes could be stored and didn't go bad so quickly. And in the higher altitudes, you'd have cold nights. They have storage, so any root vegetables would last, but not the fruits. Fruits were very rare. Only in season would you get a peach or something like a pear. But meat was plentiful. So they'd have either mutton, the sheep, or they'd have goat, which they didn't like because there wasn't much meat on a goat. Or you'd have the big beef and you'd have the big steak. And then they would take the dried steak, jerky, and they put a whole pack of that together. And so the diet was not good. So you look at the teeth, rotting teeth, bleeding gums, puffy gums, diseases from those puffy gums. So needless to say, people didn't like to chew something really hard. And meat that is out there on the hoof is a hard meat. Why? Because historically, cattle should only be fed grass. But to get to the grass, they have to wander. Just like the buffalo had giant pastures out in Montana and Wyoming where they could eat for months on end. Cattle at a higher altitude, you don't have a lot of grass. So they'd walk a lot. And when you walk a lot and you're using those legs a lot, it gets tough, just like working out. Could you imagine what a bodybuilder's muscles, if it were eaten, it'd be as tough as a cow out there or a bull. But now they want to massage the meat every day, give it certain products to make it fat. So that's the whole aging process. So it was really bad. Now, today, people eat, they eat the wrong foods, which really back up their digestive system. They're terribly toxic. They're filled with chemicals and bacteria and viruses. So what do you need? You need a fermented food, because fermentation can help reestablish healthy bacteria. And in that healthy bacteria, it can help overcome a lot of diseases and prevent a lot of diseases. Now, there's a lot of different fermented foods, and some are real easy. Like one of the easiest ones to take in is sauerkraut. Yeah, good old American sauerkraut. Throw some in a salad, it's great for you. It is the culturing and which bacteria are used in the culturing process that creates the healing. And some cultures have mastered this, mainly in Southeast Asia, like Japanese and Chinese have done this. And the Koreans have done it. One is called kimchi, K-I-M-C-H-I, very popular now. It's a probiotic strain isolated from the fermented cabbage preparation and comes from the Lactobacillus brevis. And it is really good if you've been exposed to pesticides. And you also can help your body if you've taken a lot of plastic, meaning if you drink out of a plastic bottle and you do microwaving in a plastic container, you've probably been exposed to a lot of an endocrine disruptive chemical called biphenyl A, which should have been banned, but the FDA, of course, didn't ban it. So kimchi will help you with that. Then probably the most used one in the world is miso, M-I-S-O. It's just a fermented soy food. It's really good for reducing a woman's breast cancer risk by up to 54%. It's good if you've had indigestion. It's good for regressing colon cancer. Then you have one that I don't particularly like the taste of. It's a little too fetid for me, but it's still good. And it's called natto, N-A-T-T-O. It also is from a fermented soybean extract, and it's been shown to suppress plaque buildup, and that's good. It helps your arteries. It also helps with nerve regeneration. So someone who's had sciatic nerve injury, multiple sclerosis, very good would be this. So one of the reasons we should be taking in these fermented products on a regular basis, because they produce a lot of good in our body, and that's the bottom line to it. So get some in there and help your body. Next up, if you're pregnant, please do not use any of the antipsychotic medication. The latest study from the Archives of General Psychiatry, which is a member of the Journal of the American Medical Association Network of Publications, is that your developing fetus will end up with lower neuromotor test scores. It can make a big difference in causing problems. So don't use them, all right? And last up is the omega-3 fatty acids can reduce depressive symptoms. In this new study, and there are a lot of others to go with this, quote, in the human body, DHA and EPA and many other of their metabolites produced a variety of biochemical pathways have substantial anti-inflammatory and tissue protective effects in several areas. And it also is highly concentrated in the central nervous system and vital nutrients in its optimum development. And its deficiency disrupts serotonin, norepinephrine, and dopamine transmission across cellular membranes, neurotransmitters that contribute to the mood and cognitive dysfunction aspect of depression. Hence, according to the prostaglandins, leukotrienes, and essential fatty acids peer-reviewed journal, the omega-3 fatty acids will help with depression. Now, yes, you can get it from what I just mentioned, but you can also get it from flaxseed oil. One last one. One of the reasons that I want as much living food, juices, chlorophyll, phytonutrients, especially in people over the age of 50, because over the age of 50, you're far more likely to have infections. And once an infection occurs on the skin, in the body, in a hospital, MRSA, you're less likely to overcome it. You're more likely to succumb to it. Ulcers are killing 80,000 to 100,000 Americans per year. These are totally preventable. But here's the latest wrinkle, and this is a major study where 16,000 people took part in the health and retirement study. What they found was this: infections can raise blood clot risk. So you don't want an infection, because as bad as it is, a respiratory infection, urinary tract infection, skin infection, you also can end up dying of a stroke from a blood clot. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Circulation. One more reason: green tea thins the blood. Onions, garlic thin the blood. Green juices and green compounding powders thin the blood. Apple juice helps thin the blood. Vitamin C and coenzyme Q10 are superstars at thinning the blood. Vitamin E and tocotrienols are at the top of the list of thinning the blood. There's no reason to end up with thick blood when we can naturally thin it and prevent a clot and prevent a stroke. I'm Gary Noll. We're here to talk about the issues that make a difference. Now, I'm going to share a commentary. Before I do that, however, just a little preface. This is one of the things that's being offered, is one of the reasons that President Obama has done good for his constituents. And I'm not suggesting to vote or not to vote for any given candidate. That's your business. I'm not involved in that. All I'm doing is I'm going to take any issue that I believe impacts the public health and offer my insight. The number one accomplishment, according to pro-Obama people, Paul Glatris and Ryan Cooper in CU Who in Washington Monthly, is, quote, number one out of 50 things accomplished by President Obama: passed health care reform. After five presidents over a century failed to create universal health insurance, quote, signed the Affordable Care Act. It will cover 32 million uninsured Americans beginning in 2014 and mandates a suite of experimental measures to cut health care costs growing and the number one cause of America's long-term financial problems. Mm-hmm. Well, here are my challenges to that. First, there is nothing, zero, in the 2,000-page health care reform that actually provides health. Now, it's kind of hard to imagine that no one thought that maybe, with Americans being number one in the world in obesity, morbid obesity, which is really, really fat, and teenage and youth diabetes, but adult diabetes in teenagers and youth, as well as we, per population in the world, we spend the most money. We're going to spend close to $3 trillion. That makes it the most expensive a thing going on. And that isn't because people are benefiting from that. The money of $3 trillion a year, per year, that's not going to make people healthier. That's going to the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies, the for-profit hospital associations, all of whom met repeatedly with Obama as candidate, Obama as president, in his White House with Ron Emanuel. That's a matter of fact. In fact, who was to be the number one person overseeing all medicine and healthcare in the United States, the most powerful position of its kind, even more powerful than the Surgeon General, the head of Health and Human Services? And that was to be a man who had been in Congress, but then left Congress, was making $5 million a year, mainly as a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical and drug health insurance companies. And that's who they selected. And it was only after scandal at the time that showed how much money he and his wife were both making that he backed out, saying, but he didn't remember his name. Let's see if someone can remember his name in a moment. There's nothing about prevention. Now, for the people who just finished a 4-week lifestyle intervention on arthritis, the results will be published. They're done. And even though I'm on the road, I got a copy of them. There's never been anything like this in the history of medicine. A, there's never been a single study that's done this with these results. Not only did it cause the arthritis to go in all these people, but it also improved their body composition, less fat. it lowered their blood pressure by 10 points, systolic blood pressure. That's a measurable, substantial drop. So it reduced their risk of having a heart attack or stroke. It reduced their risk of staying overweight. It improved their flexibility, mobility, improved their immune system. Across the board, it was a big help. You think that maybe someone who's figuring out that we're spending all this money on disease, that maybe we ought to prevent some of this disease? Nothing. Nothing about prevention. So we got a healthcare plan that doesn't talk about prevention, doesn't offer you any alternatives if you get sick, doesn't promote the idea that there's a connection between environmental issues and cancer, or behavioral issues in any disease. It's all about who gets the money. So the debate surrounding the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act illustrates, in my opinion, and that of Chris Hedges, the impoverishment of our political life. Here is a law that had its origins in the right-wing Heritage Foundation. It was first put into practice in 2006 in Massachusetts by then-Governor Mitt Romney and was solidified into federal law after corporate lobbyists wrote legislation with about 2,000 pages. It is a law that forces American citizens to buy deeply defective product from private insurance companies. It is a law that is the equivalent of the bank bailout bill. Remember that? Remember all those subsidies? Yeah. And some $447 billion in subsidies for insurance interests alone. Let me repeat that, because you're not going to hear anyone talking about this. Unless this is overturned, the insurance companies that did the lobbying, that bought access, are going to make $447 billion in profit alone. And for the pharmaceutical companies, up to $1 trillion they'll get on just the Medicare part of the bill over its lifespan. Why? Because with the law that they wrote, you cannot, if you're the VA or Medicare or Medicaid, you can't go onto the market and say, let's just say that you need a drug, and the drug you're being offered is $200 a bottle, but there's an absolutely equal drug, a generic version made that would cost you $2 a bottle. You can't buy that. They wrote that into the legislation. Now, it is a law that is unconstitutional and is a law by which President Obama and his corporate backers extinguished the possibility of both a public option, which I am for, and Medicare for all Americans. There's no substantial difference between Obamacare and Romney Care. There's no substantial difference between Obama and Romney. They're abject servants of the corporate state, and if you vote for one, you vote for the other. But you would never know this by listening to the Democratic Party, the official Democratic Party, the corporate party, and the advocacy groups that purport to support universal health care but seem more intent on reelecting Obama. It is the very sad legacy of the corporate liberal class. I'm distinguishing that from the historical liberal class that proves in election cycle after election cycle that it espouses moral and political positions it will not pay a price to defend. And since we have no fight in us, since we will not punish politicians who betray our core beliefs, the corporate juggernaut rolls forward with its pace to cement into place our global neo-feudalism. Now, Chris Hedges is very adamant on this, protesting outside the Supreme Court recently as it heard arguments on the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act were both conservatives from Americans for Prosperity who denounced the president as a socialist and demonstrators from Democratic front groups such as the SEIU and the Families USA Healthcare Consumer Group who chanted protect the law. Well, lost between these two factions were the few stalwarts who hold quite different views, including public health care advocates, Dr. Margaret Flowers, Dr. Carol Paris, who we'll be hopefully interviewing on this program shortly, and doctors, or attorneys Oliver Hall and Kevin Zies and others. They displayed a banner that read, single payer now, strike down Obama mandate. They at least have not relinquished the demand for single-payer health care for all Americans. And I throw my lot in with those renegades dismissed, no doubt, as cranks or dreamers or impractical by those who flee into the embrace of empty political theater and junk politics. These single-payer advocates, joined by 50 doctors, filed a brief to the court that challenges, in the name of universal health care, the individual mandate. Quote, "We have the solution, we have the resources, we have the money to provide lifelong, comprehensive, high-quality health care to every person," end quote, Dr. Flowers said when spoken to a couple days later by Chris Hedges. "Many Americans have not accepted the single-payer approach, quote, because people get confused by the politics. People accept the Democratic argument that this Obamacare is all we can have or this is something we can build on. If we're trying to meet the goal of universal health coverage and the only way to meet that goal is to force people to purchase private insurance, then you might consider that is constitutional," Flowers said. "Our argument is that the individual mandate does not meet the goal of universality. When you attempt to use the individual mandate and expansion of Medicaid for coverage, only about half of the uninsured gain coverage. This is what we've seen in Massachusetts. We do, however, have systems in the United States that could meet the goal of universality. That would be either a Veterans Administration's type system, which is a socialized system run by the government, or a Medicare-type system, a single-payer, publicly financed healthcare system. If the U.S. Congress had considered an evidence-based approach to health reform instead of writing a bill that funnels more wealth to insurance companies that deny and restrict care, it would have been a no-brainer to adopt a single-payer health care system, much like our own Medicare. We are already spending enough on health care in this country to provide high-quality, universal, comprehensive, lifelong health care. All the data point to a single-payer system as the only way to accomplish this and control health care cost," end quote. Well, Obamacare will, according to the figures that we have from the Physicians for a National Health Plan, leave at least 23 million Americans without insurance, a figure that translates into about 23,000 unnecessary deaths per year among people who cannot afford care. Costs will continue to climb. There are no caps on premiums. I was just told last week from my CPA, "Oh, by the way, Gary, we got to find, you know, some solutions here because all the health care for the company just increased 16%. I said, "But it would just increase 6 months ago, 15%. "Yeah, and it'll probably increase again." And that includes people are getting increases for pre-existing conditions. The elderly. Let me explain to the elderly, because I'm out here. I'm talking with the elderly every day. You can expect a 300% rate increase provided that is different than a young person. That's right. You're going to be charged three times the rate provided to the young. Companies with predominantly female workforces can be charged higher gender-based rates. Most of us will soon be paying about 10% of our entire annual income to buy commercial health insurance, although this coverage will pay for only about 70% of medical expenses. Well, what happens to that other percent? What if you have cancer? What if you have a stroke? What if you're in a car accident? If you get seriously ill and lose your income and cannot pay the skyrocketing premiums, then you'll be denied coverage. The dizzying array of loopholes in the law written by the insurance and pharmaceutical lobbyists means, in essence, that the healthy will receive insurance while the sick and chronically ill will be priced out of the market. Medical bills are already 62% of all personal bankruptcies, 80% of those declaring personal bankruptcy because medical costs had, and by the way, they had insurance, didn't cover it. The U.S. spends twice as much per capita on health care as any other industrialized nation, $8,160 per person. Private insurance bureaucracies and paperwork and profits, they absorb 31%. That's $1 trillion a year. Streamlining payment through a single non-payer would save $400 billion a year, enough to provide comprehensive, high-quality coverage for all Americans. But as long as corporations determine policy, as long as they can use their money to determine who gets elected and what legislation gets passed, we remain their hostages. It matters little in our corporate state that nearly two-thirds of the public wants single-payer and that it is backed by 59% of doctors. Public debates on Obama health care reform, controlled by corporate dollars, ruthlessly silence those who support single-payer. The Senate Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus, a politician who gets more than 80% of his campaign contributions from outside his home state, Montana, locked out of the Affordable Care Act hearing, a number of public health care advocates, including Dr. Flowers and Dr. Paris, the two physicians and six other activists who were arrested and taken away. Baucus had invited 41 people to testify, none of them backed single payer. Those who testified included contributors who had given a total of $3 million to the committee members on that panel. It's not necessary to force Americans to buy private health insurance to achieve universal coverage. There's a proven alternative that Congress should be examining and is not. So, in conclusion, before everyone starts harping upon Obama's 50 top accomplishments, take the time to understand them, look at them honestly, and if the number one is his passage of the Health Care Reform Act, it will not prevent any diseases. You will still not have millions of Americans covered. You will still not be able to select the people and the care that you want. There is no way you're going to get alternative therapy in there, and you can still be denied, and we're all going to be paying premiums through the roof. At the end of the day, when all this political hoo-ha-ha has subsided, someone will say, how could the American public have allowed this to happen? I'm Gary Noll. Those are my thoughts. And Chris Hedges, I'd like your thoughts. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We're going to take a break and come back. We'll be joined in studio by our executive producer, Richard Gill, who'll be telling you about some interesting things we're doing to take on the Alex Corporations, as well as our newsmaker, Doug Rocky, who will have an update on how bad is it for American veterans. 30 million strong, add in all their family members, you're dealing with one half the American population. Yet why do they not have any political clout? Why are they completely denied and neglected? What's changing? Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Like sweet morning dew, I took one look at you, and it was plain to see you were my destiny.
With arms open wide, sacrifice for you, dedicate my life to you. I'll go where you lead,
on,
always there in time of need.
When I lose my will, you will be there to bring me up the hill. There's no looking back for us. We got love, show up, that's enough. You're all I need to get by.
90s Heavy List, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Now, I'm out of the loop, technically, and we do have a phone number that people can listen to this program from anywhere in North America, and I'm going to ask my engineer to give me that number because I want to pass it on to you because we have a lot of people listening over this phone number. And it's a big plus for all of you who don't have computers or may not have access to your computer, may be out walking or driving or in a cab and want to hear the show. Here is the number, so please take this down. It's 832-280-0066. That's 832-280-0066. Now, I don't have the newest figure, but the last figure I had, we were approaching for just a couple weeks, we've offered this, 500,000 minutes of usage. That's 500,000 minutes of usage. Of all the different radio stations in the world that use it, we were number one. So I just wanted, and I don't know what it is today, maybe Jason can get in, come in and let us know. Anyhow, we're going to take your calls here. So on what I just talked about, again, we're going to be taking on all 50 of these claims at how well it's, you know, Obama's done. And by the way, it doesn't matter who's in the White House. Someone says they're going to vote for me because I did this. Fine. Let's look at it and see what you actually did. And on this one, there's no way that this is helping us. It's all helping the insurance companies and Big Pharma. And for private hospitals. Now, let's say hello to Doug Rocky, who is standing by. And just a little background on Doug.
Good morning, Gary.
Hi. Doug is an expert and probably the number one expert in the United States on depleted uranium and its health risks. He served in the U.S. Armed Forces for 40 years, including combat in Vietnam and Gulf War. He retired a major who was U.S. Army's depleted uranium project director in the mid-90s, and he developed congressionally mandated education and training manuals. And he's taught nuclear and biological and chemical warfare and emergency medicine for 25 years and has served as an advisor to the CDC and U.S. Institute for Medicine, U.S. Senate, and U.S. Department of Defense. And he's a professor at the University of Illinois in Urbana. And he's here today to give us an update. By the way, he also has a program every Sunday evening on Progressive Radio Network called The Warrior Connection. And we're very excited by that because there are 30 million vets in the United States, but they haven't been uniformed. They haven't been together. They haven't been working as a power group, which would make them formidable when you add in their families. And Doug is trying to reconcile that by having a radio show that they can all call into and listen to and then share their concerns and solutions. Nice to have you with us, Doug.
Thank you, Gary.
A couple quick questions in our newsmaker update. One, we know that there were about 58,000 Americans who died in the 10-year Vietnam War. How many American vets have died in the first and second Iraqi wars? That not battlefield injuries, but due to exposure, depleted uranium and Gulf War syndrome and biological weapons and everything else.
Well, we're looking for a Desert Storm or Gulf War I, probably around 100,000. And we're looking at Iraqi freedom and enduring freedom, probably approaching 200,000. The incredible numbers are dying all over the place every day. So we're just seeing incredible numbers of deaths from complex toxic exposures. But as you talked about, you know, the Vietnam era, we're looking at 250,000 now because all of us Vietnam veterans are 60s. And Agent Orange and everything is catching up and everything. So you got all the cardiac, the diabetes, and everything devastating the Vietnam age population. And then we have Desert Storm, over 300,000. 300,000. That's well over 50% of those left alive are in serious medical problems seeking medical care from the VA. And the VA just put out a brand new report on health effects and medical care for that. And again, a lot of nonsense. And then with OIF and OEF, OND, the current one, we're approaching already 750,000 casualties are already in the VA for care. And we've got 15% of the active duty force is non-deployable right now. 15% of the active duty Army is non-deployable because of medical problems.
But they denied that these medical problems were real for 22 years.
At least, and we go back 40 years for, you know, Agent Orange and everything else, so it's just devastating. There isn't a day that goes by where we don't get a phone call or get a request for help, or there's some, you know, stuff on the Internet where, you know, veterans chat groups are trying to get help and everything. But the VA just continues their merry way. One of the big things that's happened, especially at Fort Lewis and Washington, again, they're just Senator Patty Murray had hearings up there the other day. Hundreds and hundreds of soldiers currently active duty with serious PTSD had their diagnosis reversed so they could send them back to war. You got individuals that are being prescribed all kinds of psychotropic drugs. At the same time, they're given pain meds. This happened to me again 2 weeks ago. I mean, you can't combine psychotropic drugs with pain meds to deal with all the physiological injuries at the same time you're trying to deal with psychological injuries. And there's a big story, again, in the news all over, again, how these interactions, these drugs are causing serious, serious effects all across the nation. So we're looking at a real mess, a total mess, delayed denial of medical care, absolute refusals to comply with their own written directives, and total refusals to comply with their own internal memorandum.
Well, those are the problems, but the problems are massive. It's only when Americans see how bad the problems are. And, of course, the last part of that is a person comes back after serving in Afghanistan, Iraq, and now they're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, or they can't fit back into their family unit, or their job has been taken away from them because they might have had a second or third or fourth deployment, and now they're homeless.
And then you've been doing work with the homeless, but just trying to get jobs for these. Because one thing, everybody had the idea, you know, during World War II and all that, they came back, individuals had some education ahead of time, it was a totally different society. You could get the military out and somehow get them some education and get them involved in employment and jobs. Today, you've got a majority of these guys coming out, and we've got over 50% have serious medical problems. Who's going to hire these guys? Who's going to pay their medical bills? Trying to get them into education. The educational programs there are incredibly good. The GI Bill and all that is there. But you've got to get these guys to get enrolled in the things. But while they're enrolled and getting the academic and vocational qualifications, who's going to pay their lifestyle? Who's going to pay for their homes and their houses and their cars and their groceries and their families? Nobody's thought about this.
Well, if we don't think about it, then we find 16,000 of them living in the woods in Titusville, Florida. As you know, that's where we filmed all across the United States, Northern California, Southern California, and the police are now throwing them out of their communities so they become invisible to the average person. You know, you go out to Sedona, you won't see them downtown Sedona, but just go 2 miles, and you'll find them living in little bases, like a tent at the base of a mountain. So I believe that we have to go in the direction of our problems, be honest about them, and then look for solutions. Doug, every Sunday night you're bringing the veteran stories to our attention and looking for solutions. There's a lot of people looking for solutions. We're happy to help all that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you very much. I mean, we've had some real interesting discussions and everything else. We're going to continue. I'm getting really top-notch guests on. We're talking about alternative medicine, identifying the problems, talking about what needs to be done in Washington, who can get it done in Washington, how do you back those people up, and then we're demanding care all the time. So, again, a thing that's getting there, we're slowly getting around, we get the information out, get the participation, and get, like you said, all the veterans involved. I got to mention your new documentary, Gary, incredible, incredible, incredible. Everybody needs to watch that, see that, take it to heart. They need to understand what that documentary talks about, and when it says this is what we need to do, somehow get our government to do so.
Well, if people want, they can go up on the website and take a look at the trailer and the people's comments coming out in the theaters, and then they'll get an idea why they should spread the message. All I'm asking now is spread the message. We've got a lot of veterans. It's our cause. We're there to help them. You can be against the wars, which I am, but for the veterans and to help them in their hour of need. That's our obligation morally. So that's what we're up to. We're going to be there helping you, and we're going to do all we can, Doug.
Well, all thank right. you very much, Gary. And as we keep saying, Progressive Radio Network is moving forward. Everybody needs to join us and come along and come on the ride. And, hey, let's make this world a better place.
Well, it is becoming a better place. And if you just saw the numbers, you'd realize how many millions of people are coming. Thanks a lot, Doug Rocky.
Thank
let's
you,
go our, Let's go out and say hello to Luann. Luann is going to be covering for Elizabeth, who's on vacation back for a month in England. And Luann is taking over, looking at your emails and letters. I can't read them. And, by the way, please don't send me any personal emails. I can't read anything for the next 8 weeks. But she can, and she's taking those that might impact a lot of us. And then from there, we'll go to Richard. But let's, Luann, we do have someone on. Let's say hello to Chris from Queens. Hi, Chris. Your comments.
Hi, Gary. I just wanted to follow up a little bit on what you were talking about, the health care. There are a couple of quick points I'd like to make that I just implore people to just stop and think. The comparison to car insurance, when they talk about the mandate, which I find totally un-American, the comparison to the car, in case people haven't noticed, the car is not a human being. Now, one could make an academic argument that, you know, you can treat it the same way and it'll feel better if you oil it on time, blah, blah, blah. The point is that that doesn't allow, the approach to this whole thing is that this does not allow for the organic processes of life that human beings go through, the human element. And people need to understand when they, and I know you've mentioned it, but it outrages me because I look at these, what you mentioned, the corporate liberal class on television, and it just disgusts me. I mean, I would rather deal with an honest conservative than any of these so-called liberals or whatever they are. The idea that you are mandating someone to buy private insurance and that amount of that money is going into insurance. People need to hear this. These are corporate people, CEOs. They're not medical personnel. They make decisions and choices whether, you know, they will cover certain tests that people need, maybe like MRIs or scans. These are not even medical personnel. They're simply CEOs making a lot of money. This has nothing to do with health care. And one more thing I would like to stress, because you've often brought up Keith Olbermann. When he was still, I implore you to watch this. I don't know if you can still access it. I would imagine that you could. Before he was, before they signed the bill in January of 2009, if I remember correctly, he was still with MSNBC. It was right around the Christmas holidays, and he was going on vacation. And the bill was on the floor of the Senate, I suppose. And he made, you know, his like 15, 20-minute commentary, which was absolutely brilliant. I'm going to tell you one thing, and I'm going to paraphrase, which goes to show you how he was a complete turncoat. He stated at this in this time he was totally against the mandate because he found it unconstitutional, and he said that he would rather go to jail rather than submit to being forced to a mandate for private insurance profit. And that was before he was fired from MSNBC. And that was in December, I believe, of 08. I guess it was signed in 09. You can check this out. You need to listen to this. And anyone listening to the program, you need to listen to this. And the reason I bring this up is because, and I'm not picking on Olbermann per se, it goes to show how all of these people are basically shills, okay? And unless people just stand up and forget about what color Obama is or the fact that he's a sweet man, I mean, his hair has also turned gray from this job, but we need to stand up and grow up a little bit and accept what it is. If you want private health care, then you have private health care. We are not automobiles.
Okay. Appreciate your comments. Thank you. Now let's go and say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Gary. A very powerful, powerful work today. Wow. I wanted to let people know that since you're out of town, if people do want to email you, I'm going to give out my email address so people can email me, and I'll be able to, if I need to, I'll be able to, you know, get your input. Otherwise, I'll be able to reply to some of their emails. So my email is whnn@aol.com. William Harry Nancy Nancy, whnn@aol.com. And what I'll be doing is I'll be sharing, while Elizabeth is gone, some of the emails that people are sending to you.
That's fine.
One of the emails that came in just recently, a Jeffrey from Boston, he says anytime he brings up all of the research, and boy, you have a lot of it, opposing vaccines, if he brings it up to people with great concern, it's often dismissed. There, anytime he brings it up, it's dismissed. So he asks, why is this happening, and what can we do to convince people that vaccines are so detrimental to our health?
I don't believe that we can convince people. I don't believe that we should put our energy into trying to, in any way, alter another person's sense of power. Because, in effect, in trying to convince them the rightness of our position would, in effect, be a disempowering move, even if they become more enlightened. I believe instead, what was an old English proverb, he who despises his own power is soon master of another's. I believe what we should do is realize that up till now, virtually everything that we know about vaccines has been unchallengeable. You could not offer any hesitation. You had to accept it in absolute obedience. Yes, they're all safe, no matter how many you give. No, there's no side effects that are going to be a problem. And yes, we need them, or they wouldn't be being made and mandated. But then when you start to actually deconstruct the arguments they've made, and you start to see, just as I did with Obama's, you know, so-called great miracle, his health care bill, it's nonsense. Same thing with vaccines. Now, up on our website, we have 18 articles of Richard Gale myself and Doug Henderson helped with one, and Nancy did, I think, four or five. We have all those articles that are all footnoted, scientifically referenced, that show you why there is almost no truth in anything we've been told about vaccines. So who's going to listen to that? And by the way, we're coming up to the end of our land-based stations listening, so you can continue over the Internet or just call 832-280-0066 and continue listening as we'll continue this discussion. So Are doctors going to change nurses, hospitals, administrators, teachers? Are those parents who believe that without vaccination their kids would be at greater risk of developing a contagion? No, they're not. Who will change are people who are already of a mindset to question? Just like our former caller. Someone who has looked carefully at an issue and looked beyond the defense of that issue by the ideology. In other words, looking beyond the orthodoxy, beyond the ritual of acceptance, and saying, you know, there's something here that just doesn't make sense. That is the person most likely then to initiate a in-depth discussion, analysis, and review to see whether or not they've been told the truth or not. Now, what happens is when you realize you've been lied to repeatedly by the same groups of people, by the same government agencies, by the same pharmaceutical companies, by the media, which refuse to touch these issues in any objective way. And who's been excluded? Well, they exclude Glenn Greenwald. They exclude Paul Craig Roberts. They exclude, you know, the real thinkers, Rabbi, Michael or Elner. They exclude the people who could challenge. So the only people you have in our media are the official talking heads who are there to support the underlying value of what is offered, even if there might be some slight contention in the process. At the end of the day, the corporations still win. Alec wins. The lobbyists win. The legislators who open their access to them for fee win. The media reporting on the controlled argument win. Who else loses? Everyone who went along without thinking. So I hope that answers that question.
Do we have time for one more?
We don't. Let's go to, because I'm going to get Richard on to talk about, but we'll set time aside for more of them tomorrow. That's Lou Ann Panessi. Let's say hello to Richard Gale. Hi,
hello,
Richard.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
Good.
Listen, very quickly, we've got for our Monday night Progressive Commentary Hour that's going to be airing this evening. It's starting at 7 p.m. It's a full hour uninterrupted to really dive in and focus on a topic. And we're going to be revisiting the NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement, and other agreements such as CAFTA and associated with the WTO. For those who don't know, that you know, this was the trilateral trade bloc, NAFTA, between Canada, U.S., and Mexico, that President Clinton had launched in 1994. It is the largest GDP of any trade bloc in the world. And we're going to be looking at, we're bringing on some real experts. This was kind of inspired to do this because of people don't really think of trade agreement, how it can affect our personal health. And it was a recent report that you came across where a study showing the direct correlation between NAFTA and the growing obesity epidemic happening in Mexico. So we're going to be looking at some of the long-term effects that are only coming to light since NAFTA back in 1994. And Manuel Perez Roca will be a guest. He's with the Coordinates Networking for Justice on Global Investment from the Institute for Policy Studies. That's an independent think tank of progressive policymaking in Washington, D.C. He was back in at the time of NAFTA, he was deeply involved in the Mexican Action Network on Free Trade in Mexico, fighting it. He has higher degrees in development studies from the Institute of Social Studies at The Hague in the Netherlands. I had a brilliant conversation with him. He's going to be an exciting person to have on. And then we're going to now be collaborating with Public Citizen in Washington, D.C. And so somebody from Public Citizen will also be his guest. But we're going to be working with them more frequently with the Progressive Radio Network. And for those who don't know, Public Citizen was started by Ralph Nader. It's it probably more than any other think tank policy organization today. This is the one that where corporations have their lobbyists in Washington, D.C. People, citizens, need their own advocates and lobbyists in D.C., and Public Citizen probably serves that role best since they they don't play any party politics. They're not associated with any political party. They never endorse any candidate. Nor do we, by the way. No, and they don't accept any government or corporate monies. It is strictly through their publications, their research, their sales. And they have 80,000, 90,000 supporters. So,
well, that's going to be this evening. So this is going to be a very powerful program. It'll give you the whole history of how we were sold, and the media participated. Politicians sold out, got pork, got all kinds of money for their pet projects if they went on this. And I was opposed to it. I'd gone down to Mexico. I saw the conditions there. The quality of life was devastatingly poor after this. The environment was just polluted, and this was the beginning of a major shift to outsource jobs and products around the world. That's why we're going to go into it. And now we have CAFTA, we have other treaties are being signed that would carry on this deadly legacy with no effort of turning around. We're going to pull back the curtain on the World Trade Organization, show you who's really behind all that. So this will be a very informed program. It is the most downloaded program that I'm aware of in all of radio in the United States, commercial or non-commercial. So people enjoy it and they tune in. I want to thank, and by the way, we will have Lynn and Vicki Saputo coming up in just a moment with Prescriptions for Health. I want to thank all of you for tuning in. I'm Gary Nall. Look forward to sharing more tonight, 7 p.m., Progressive Commentary Hour, right here on the Progressive Radio Network. Have a nice day, everyone.